step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
On this edition of the show, we're going to dive right back into the war in Ukraine and talk more about what's going on. Now, as I sit here and I look at this from a geopolitical scope, the political scientist in me cannot help but wonder, what is the end game here? What does Vladimir Putin think he's going to accomplish when all is said and done? Or, what are his objectives? What are his goals? And when is enough enough? When has he reached a point where he can look at his staff and his subordinates and the citizens of Russia and say, we have achieved our goals, we have gotten to the point that we set out to get to, and now we are coming home to, you know, enjoy our victory? You would think that when they were planning this all out, they certainly had different ideas than what they've run into. Now, don't get it twisted, folks, and don't get too caught up in all of the hype and, we'll just call it what it is, propaganda, that the Ukrainian army, the regulars, are going to have any chance to stem the tide of this Russian flow forever. That's not going to be the case. Eventually, Russia is going to break through these defensive lines, and they're going to get to these city centers. Now, with that said, nobody expected the Ukrainians to do what they're doing, and it's been nothing short of miraculous, the successes that they have had. A lot of that has to do with poor planning on the Russians' part, perhaps, or maybe overconfidence, considering how easy things were in 2014. But whatever the reasoning is behind it, the facts are the facts, and the Ukrainians have put up quite the resistance as the Russians have tried to move their armor columns to encircle these cities. There's reports of serious fighting going on in Kharkiv still. There's reports now of an imminent attack into Odessa via amphibian forces. So you see the Russians starting to tighten the grip here, starting to tighten the noose. And for me, it's really a foregone conclusion that without help from the outside, the Ukrainians have no chance to stand up to the Russians in your traditional kind of warfare. And as the Russians get closer to these cities and the Russians start unleashing more of their munitions, their artilleries, thermal barrack weaponry, it's going to become a much more bloodier pursuit for the Ukrainian defenders. Now, with that said, with the morale that we have seen from the Ukrainians and from the way the Ukrainians have shown their will to fight, even if the Russians do come in and say they take Kyiv, say they dismantle the leadership structure, get rid of President Zelensky, and install their own puppet government, Putin can't honestly think that there's not going to be an insurgency, can he? The blueprint has already been laid out. And while I am not a big proponent of insurgencies, that is most certainly what we are sliding towards in Ukraine. Now, America should have learned their lesson with insurgencies as far as what happened with Al-Qaeda and then turning into 9/11 and the rest of it. We all know the history. Once you start arming separatist groups, even if it's the separatist group that you back, you don't know where those armaments are going to end up when all is said and done. And there's a lot of bad actors on the stage, folks, that probably shouldn't have man pads or the rest of some of the munitions that these separatists are going to have. But I think that's a conversation that we'll have at a different point when we're talking about some of the different, scenarios that we can be looking at in the future. Today, we're going to talk about the endgame, though. What is Putin's endgame? And what would be a point and a bit of negotiation that could be had where that we could see an end to the bloodshed here, an end to the war? Because for me, I don't find anything enjoyable about this. I'm not cheering on any sides. Look, war is horrible. I'm against war at all costs, right? Until there's nothing else left to do. But I also understand that if I was a Ukrainian citizen, I would be fighting to the very last drop of my blood for my freedom and my loved ones and my relatives and my traditions and the history of my country and the rest of it. So I can't blame the Ukrainians for, you know, not wanting to give up or not wanting to just negotiate any terms that are not favorable to them. They have to have terms that are favorable to them, that promises their security. Because without that, then what's the point? So to discuss all of this, I wrote an article earlier today, and I'm going to start doing this a little bit more often. I've gotten away from writing a whole lot since I've been podcasting, and I've decided to do some more writing lately. So this article that I'm going to share with you is an article that I wrote earlier today, and you can find it on Substack. I'll put a link to the Substack page in the description box. This is the first article I've put on Substack. Like I said, I really haven't been doing too much writing, but I plan on doing a whole lot more in regards to what's going on here in Ukraine. Some articles about what's going on with the Jeffrey Epstein case and various other articles you'll find throughout of different stories that interest me that I actually know a little something about. So the article that we're about to read, you'll be able to find at Substack. All right, let's jump in. What is the endgame in Ukraine? This article, like I said, was authored by me. Putin and Russia have long claimed that the expansion of NATO poses a big problem for their domestic security. And when you look at it from a purely geopolitical perspective, they are not wrong. Now look, folks, when you're looking at it just without any kind of biased glasses on, not us versus them, not we're the West, they're Russia, and you look at it geopolitically speaking, they have a gripe there. Having all of these weapons around them, having all of these countries that they feel are belligerent armed to the teeth around them is not a good look. I know America certainly didn't want Russian weapons in Cuba. We all know what happened there. Imagine how America would act if, say, Russia wanted to put missiles in Tijuana. It wouldn't go over so well, right? So they do have a decent gripe there, but it kind of falls flat when you look at history and how there has not been aggression as far as militaristic aggression moving towards Russia. Now, you can talk about the expansionism and the cultural war between NATO and Russia for some of those breakaway republics, some who have joined NATO and some who haven't, and those are all legitimate points. What is left out of this narrative, however, is the reason why all of these nations joined NATO in the first place, and that is historical aggression from Russia. Now, let's just call it what it is. Russia has historically been very aggressive towards its neighbors. This isn't something that just happened overnight. This is ingrained in Russian culture. They're the big dog on the block, and they feel like that's their sphere of influence, their backyard. And since those NATO countries that were once Soviet republics joined NATO, they feel wronged by that. But for those who pitch the narrative that it's, NATO aggressiveness and NATO overexpansion, while I understand that narrative and that point of view, I just think it falls flat, considering we've seen the aggressive approach from Russia. We've seen the way that Russia has impeded their neighbor's way of life over and over again, either be it with military engagements or, otherwise. It's important to remember that these nations were yoked with brutal Soviet control, where freedom didn't exist, and where their relatives would disappear if they spoke out against the Soviets or their allies. So you can understand why these nations specifically don't want to go back to a life like that. I'm a quarter Polish, and I have some Ukrainian blood with me, but I don't know family there or anything like that. But I know my Polish relatives, and I can tell you right now, these people will never, ever accept communism or accept being under the yoke of Russia ever again. And there's a lot of people in the West who have a lot of snide comments about what's going on over in Ukraine, and people forget to, the fact that we're talking about human beings here, people who have a lot of distrust, and people who have been burned a lot of times in the past. So, of course, they're not going to be drawn into the atmosphere of Russia when they have other choices on the table. This wasn't ancient history to these people. This is a mere 30 years ago. So it's a very westernized perspective to not understand what motivated the NATO expansion in the first place. That said, I find the excessive placement of nuclear-capable missiles close to Russia to be a bad idea, especially considering technology lets us launch nukes from anywhere on Earth, basically. In my opinion, this is an unneeded escalation. This is a concession that we should make to Russia if we're looking to negotiate our way out of this. And that's what we should be looking to do, by the way, folks. Don't let anybody talk you into any kind of craziness about World War III or no-fly zones. We're nowhere near that point yet. And teetering on the edge of disaster is certainly not what we should be doing until we exhaust every other possibility. Insiders who monitor the TV programming in Russia have said that for weeks the state TV channels have been hammering home the narrative that the action within Ukraine is not a war and that it is being embarked upon as an action to protect Russians in the breakaway republics who have been embroiled in an insurgency against the Ukrainian government. So, look, war is propaganda. Both sides are doing it. The Ukrainians are pumping out propaganda at a fevered pitch, and so are the Russians. The Russians created kompromat. They created propaganda almost. So anyone who acts like the Russian narrative is one that should be followed and not questioned is crazy too. Like everything else, folks, question all of this stuff. Verify it. Look it up. Do the research. Do the legwork. Because there are way too many people out there that are just trying to pitch narratives that really, honestly, don't make any sense right now. They have also asserted, and to a degree of truth, that there are neo-Nazi elements within the Ukrainian Defense Forces. Yes, that is 100% true. There are some elements of neo-Nazis in these defense forces. How come these same people, however, aren't talking about the psychotic Chechen murderers that are coming into Ukraine from Russia? If you're going to talk about one group of extremists, we have to talk about all of them. My point is this, and it's the same point I make when we're dealing with Jeffrey Epstein and Maxwell and the rest of them. All of these people are gray characters. And when it comes to war, if you put a sword in a man's hand, any man has the ability to become an animal, right? And we're certainly going to be seeing that. And while I detest any sort of neo-Nazi knucklehead BS nonsense, to try and castigate all of the Ukrainian forces as neo-Nazis is very, very dishonest. Yet, they have pushed this narrative to maximum burn on local radio and broadcasts. They have also leaned on the narrative that they simply had to invade Ukraine to provide the proper level of security to the motherland due to the belligerence and outward expansionism of NATO. So that was part of their narrative. It was all cutely bundled up and wrapped up nicely. The breakaway republics were getting shelled, the narrative that the people were under attack for 8 years. We have to go and rescue these people who are being ethnically cleansed. And to do that, what they did was get all of the people riled up in Russia anyway, who watch these news programs and stuff, all fired up to dehumanize their opponents. They're Nazis, they're killing, ethnic Russians. These people are less than human. We have to go in there and exterminate them. And when you pump all of that, you know, rage porn consistently, especially in a place like Russia, where there's no other options really to get other information, it has an effect. While this strategy has done its job in whipping up support for the operation, it also paints Putin and Moscow into a serious corner, especially in light of the operation not going according to plan and the Russian forces losing a lot of equipment and lives. Now, of course, there is a bunch of propaganda from Kyiv and the Ukrainian forces and the Ukrainian MOD discussing the casualty numbers. And some of it's absurd, in my opinion. A lot of it is crazy. But the official numbers we're about to talk about here in a second, I think they're a little bit low as well. We know that the Russians are not the kind of people to come out and talk about their losses in a battlefield. We know that they're not going to be honest about how many soldiers were killed or hurt or, you know, injured. It's all about morale, right? And when it comes to the Russian forces that we have seen so far, the first grouping anyway, they really haven't had the morale for the fight, it looks like. A lot of them have surrendered. But again, like I cautioned earlier, this is only the first wave. This is more of a probing attack from Russia. And they've just started recently moving into the next step of their doctrine, which is a lot more vicious, and it brings in a lot more better trained troops and better tactical plans and ideas. The Russian Ministry of Defense has reported that the number of dead so far for Russia is 498 and over 1,500 injured. Like I said, that's the official number from the Russian MOD, Ministry of Defense. I'm guessing that you could probably safely say that there's at least 1,000 more dead than that. Considering what we have seen, I'd say a safe estimate is anywhere between 1,500 and 2,500 or so Russian casualties thus far. I think that's a safe number, considering you had the Ukrainian sources talking about over 5,000, 6,000. That's a bit absurd. History has shown that we should take all the numbers and claims by both sides with a grain of salt, however, as both sides are very cognizant of morale. It is almost shocking that they'd even admit to this many casualties. For context, America had roughly 2,400 killed in action in Afghanistan throughout the duration. Conversely, Russia lost roughly 3,000 troops during the war in Grozny, the Chechen War, and it was brutal. That was a brutal campaign that was conducted by some brutal people. But even that was the type of campaign where Vladimir Putin was able to go in and basically have one of these surgical operations that he's so used to. That is not the case right now. This is ground to a halt almost. And there is serious casualties on both sides. With all of this in mind, it's very important to understand that Russian culture is not the kind of culture that accepts surrender or pulling back once something like this occurs. They must show strength always. It is a matter of national pride, even if it's hard for us in the West to understand. And now with Putin, that's going to play a big part here. He has really been painted into the corner, the sanctions and the scorn, all of the oligarchs losing their money, the central bank sanctions. All of this is very devastating to Russia. And Vladimir Putin, he can't appear weak, right? So what's he going to do? He's going to stop now before he reaches his objectives? He can't do it. The Russian culture won't allow it, first of all. Second of all, he knows that he's finished if he comes back with anything less than victory at this point. And that's not hyperbole. This is almost a do-or-die situation for Putin, and the more he gets backed into the corner, the more dangerous the man becomes, in my opinion. The Ukrainian resistance has been nothing short of miraculous. their forces were expected to wither in the face of overbearing force brought upon them by Russia. But that has not happened. And they really haven't. Now, they've taken their lumps, they've taken their losses, but Russia didn't just roll right in here and roll them over. These guys were waiting for them with all kinds of goodies that we talked about a little while earlier from America and Western allies that are giving the Russians all kinds of pain. Now, remember, when all of these weapons were being designed, most of the time, they were being designed with Russia and recently China in mind. So they're very effective against Russian weaponry and Russian armor. In a stunning turn, the Ukrainians have not only been able to stall the advance for a grueling week, but they have been able to keep their air operations active, even if they have been diminished. So the fact that Russia has not been able to establish a superior air force here is just insane to me. You would think that that would be the first thing that would happen with all of their superior technology, their planes, their fifth generation fighter jets, that they'd be able to go in there, hammer the infrastructure, and have it ready to go. But that is not the case. The air defenses in Kyiv and around the country have held strong, and not only that, they've downed some of these Russian jets, some of these Russian bombers, and certainly some of these Russian helicopters. I'm not going to go into numbers because I can't really confirm all of that, but there are some really solid sources, places like Twitter, that are documenting the numbers as far as vehicles lost on both sides.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All of these factors coming together and the horror of seeing their nation shelled by land, air, and sea has brought the Ukrainian people together like never before. The arguments and fights of yesterday have all been put away, and the only thing that matters now is the survival of their nation and the defeat of the invaders. While this mindset is admirable, and it is hard not to respect anyone, nation, or a single individual who stands up to a bully, I fear that their courage is going to end up costing them to incur horrific casualties as the fighting moves deeper into the cities. As this becomes more of an insurgency, if it becomes an insurgency, it's going to become a lot more vicious, a lot more deadly for everybody involved. We're talking about door-to-door, house-to-house fighting. We're talking about IEDs, landmines, booby traps, snipers, you name it, it's going to happen. And I don't know if people are really ready for all of that in a major European city. I don't know if people really understand what a true insurgency entails. A lot of people haven't spent the time following what went on in Iraq or Afghanistan or what's going on in Syria or countless other places. These insurgencies are nothing to joke about. They're serious business. And if you have a well-armed insurgency, it is going to be a very, very tough proposition for Russia to occupy the country of Ukraine. They have said time and time again that they refuse to give in, and they will not accept anything else but a free Ukraine. This could lead to an insurgency that makes what happened in Iraq and Afghanistan look like a warm-up. It would also end up becoming the first publicly sanctioned insurgency in modern history. Now remember, in Afghanistan, it was a different story, right? Considering that in Afghanistan, the funneling of weapons into the country to harm the Soviet cause had to be kept under wraps, and rat lines had to be developed to bring them in. I find this to be a startling new development and a strategy that I never thought we'd see play out in the open, such as it is. We are feeding lethal weapons to kill Russian citizens to Russia's enemies, and we're doing it openly. That is a major escalation, folks, and I understand why it's happening. I understand why people would want to do it. I understand why the West would want to do it. But there's no way around it. And remember, I'm speaking to you now, not as your usual Bobby, but as the political scientist Bobby. There is no way around it besides talking about how that's a serious escalation. Can you imagine if the Russians were arming the Afghans, or if they were arming the Iraqis when we were over there and we were occupying the country and they had access to this modern day weaponry and they were blowing the hell out of American troops? We would have never stood for it. So this is certainly a big time escalation, much more so than any of the predicates such as, oh, NATO's going to attack. That's all BS, right? All of that border stuff, like we discussed yesterday, that's just a reasoning for him. But when it comes to this, this is a serious escalation. And furthermore, if we're going to do this, I don't see why we wouldn't be providing them with fighter jets as well. This has not only enabled the Ukrainian forces to fight back, but it has emboldened them to dig in and keep going until the invaders are all jettisoned back across the border. So again, while that is very noble, and I have so much respect for these people, and I'd be doing the same thing, like I said, if it was me, I wouldn't give a shit about anything else. I'd be digging in, and it would be either I'm going to die here defending my people, or we're going to repel these invaders. So I don't have anything but respect for these Ukrainian defenders. I just fear for the safety of all of the civilians and all of the people when this becomes an insurgency. While this might seem like bravado, from what I've seen so far, the Ukrainian defense forces, they are highly motivated and now they are heavily armed. This leads to a long and drawn-out campaign. While the cost in human lives and destruction will mainly be within the borders of Ukraine, the war of public opinion that is being waged in Russia and around the world will turn even worse for Putin as the coffins continue to come home filled with young Russian men who had their whole lives to live, but had their fire snuffed out by the Game of Thrones being played by the men of always. And I hope that everybody keeps that in mind when we're, you know, hoping Russia loses or whatever it is people are rooting for. I know that sounds weird to me to even say that. But keep in mind that these are real people. This isn't a movie. And these young Russian soldiers, a lot of them are conscripts who didn't even want to be here in the first place. And we can argue about them, you know, turning on their leader and all of that. But I think that having some respect for the dead, and especially prisoners of war, I think it goes a long way. Now, is that going to be respected? A lot of times when things become very acrimonious, a lot of war crimes do end up happening. And I'm not just saying in this theater, by the way. I'm an American, and my country has been involved in plenty of their own. You see, when the fog of war gets on you, and you're in that situation, like I said, you put a sword in a man's hand and he becomes an animal. This will all just lead to a more ferocious insurgency that sees men and women streaming in from around the world, taking a page from the jihadi playbook. Imagine what the insurgencies in Iraq and Afghanistan would have been able to do with access to Western weapons such as manpads and NLAWs. Soon, you will not have to imagine this if a peaceful resolution can't be found, because this will be the reality. And it will be grim. And for the first time ever, it will be broadcast live and directly to you via social media. And we're seeing that already. We're seeing the two competing narratives compete with each other on social media, the Russian narrative and the Ukrainian narrative. And it's a battle of information as much as it's a battle of inches on the ground. So, what is the end game here? How do we come to a peaceful resolution in a very complex situation that appeases everyone? That's the hard part, isn't it? Like any other negotiation, you must give to get, and both sides are set that their motivation and their cause is righteous. It is a very difficult process to find terms that are acceptable. In my opinion, there are a few options that might fit the bill and prove to be equitable for both sides. Vladimir Putin cannot afford to lose this war or to be seen as not reaching his objectives. It is simply not an option. He will decimate the whole entire country of Ukraine before this happens at this point. And I'm convinced of that. I'm not saying he's going to go nuclear, but he will destroy this country. He will just absolutely reduce it to rubble, just like Grozny. He cannot lose, folks. And he's been backed into a corner. With the sanctions and the death grip of the rest of the world, with the death grip the rest of the world has Russia in, Putin has no other choice at this point other than achieving victory. The question is, what is victory? Would Ukraine ceding the breakaway regions and the West recognizing not only Donbas but Luhansk regions but Crimea as Russian territories be enough to appease Putin and give him enough to say he achieved the goals of the operation? Depending on how long this drags out, I think it might be. If this ends relatively soon, if they can come to an agreement, I think that might be an equitable set of terms. Maybe basically split the country in half almost. But it's definitely a way that Putin can save a little bit of face. And remember, that has to play a part as far as these negotiations go. Because he's not going to go back with mud on his face. He's not going to go back to Russia and say, oh, well, we didn't achieve our goals. What would the Ukrainians get from all of this? Well, they need some sort of peace guarantee, and this is where it gets sticky. How can anyone convince the Ukrainians to disarm at this point when the whole world already sat back and watched Russia roll in? All of that was with a functioning military and security force. What would happen if they disarmed and Russia decided to come back? Who's going to come in and rescue them? If history holds true, the answer is nobody. They would be on their own, and this is the biggest problem for Ukraine in any negotiation. Who is going to enforce these parameters? So it will be a very hard sell to get the Ukrainians to drop their weapons and cease hostilities. If they can find a workable plan around these parameters, I think that this might be the best way to achieve peace in the region. One thing is for sure, if they do not find a pathway to peace very soon, things are only going to become grimmer, and the casualties will only grow. All right, folks. Well, there you have it. That's what I have for you tonight on this edition of Beyond the Horizon and our coverage of the war in Ukraine. If you'd like to contact me, you can do that at bobbycappucci@protonmail.com. That's BOBBYCAPUCCI at protonmail.com. You can find me on Twitter at BOBBY_CAPUCCI. All of the links, including the Substack link, are in the description box.